Welcome to Health Centers on the Front Lines. I am your host, Amy Simmons-Farber. An effort is underway to get back to almost normal. The U.S. gears up to roll out COVID vaccinations for 5 to 11-year-olds, and health centers will play a large role in bringing the shots to where the kids are. And in many cases, that could be at local school districts. Today, we'll talk to experts about how that effort could be operationalized and what it might look like. I am pleased today to be joined by Anna Goddard, Vice President for Quality Research and Evaluation at the School-Based Health Alliance. Also, Dr. Jenny McLaurin, Pediatrician and Senior Fellow for Public Health Integration and Innovation at NAC. And also Paula Fields, VP of Programs and Technical Assistance at the School-Based Health Alliance. And thank you so much for joining us today for this conversation. Just speaking of healthcare and schools, a lot of us are old enough to remember lining up to get our shot in the school cafeteria vaccinations, and it was a rite of passage. But now an activity like that would be highly politicized and even draw parental opposition in local school districts. Why is that the case?
Well, Or I guess I would rephrase that a little as like, what has changed since that time? And I think at first we would just start out by saying we want to recognize that parents and schools and healthcare personnel are all wanting what's best for children. Parents' opposition is, you know, oftentimes it's based in that place of love and concern for their children. So we need to ask or reframe that. What is your concern for the vaccine? And then answer them as clinicians and leaders in the field with very clear, direct answers. We want to kind of avoid shaming people, right? Because it's really not effective. Most people are all overwhelmed, including these parents, and they get overwhelmed with medical jargon and technical information. So instead, we really should focus our efforts on translating that vaccine science for a different health literacy level.
There has been more of a mistrust based on misinformation and very well coordinated misinformation campaigns that specifically target parents at this point and children, and really operate on fear. And a lot of times it's not that parents don't understand information, it's that they don't believe it. And so they need to be approached by people that they trust. And building trust is the first thing that has to happen before any sort of recommendation of a vaccine and how great it is for health. That falls on deaf ears unless there's already an established trust.
Yeah, I've been reading about how we not only have a pandemic in this country, but an infodemic where people are not trusting sources of information, which is why providers and alliances, what we're talking about today with school-based, with schools and local school districts integrating healthcare and education, could operate as a great trust builder. As we prepare to vaccinate 28 million kids who may be eligible in this country for vaccinations, can you share why school-based health centers are essential in this effort?
School-based health centers are known as a trusted source in the schools. They have their medical providers, which are oftentimes pediatric nurse practitioners, and they have their school nurse, and they have their behavioral health clinician right in the school that they've been working with. And so school-based health centers have been recognized as a modality of trust in that relationship building, because school-based health centers are built on that relationship and connections. Paula, do you want to expand on that? Because I know you've done so much work related to relationship buildings in schools.
And the relationship building is the integral part, and having that relationship and building that relationship and building up on working together before the immunizations and the trust. And from that, partnering with the school services and the parents or the families to really elevate what's important and talk through the differences around the interpretations as referenced earlier, I think is very important, building on that relationship that's already there.
What are some of the considerations that go into starting and operationalizing a vaccine site at a school? Can you walk us through some of those?
Sure. When you're looking at launching a new partnership with schools for vaccinations or physicals or other needs, one way to start a partnership is consider approaching the school's or the district's central office. The administrator of the school district's often referred to as the superintendent, has the power and authority to really hold the final level of support to sign off between whatever work that is at the district and the health center. Or it also works the other way. Consider approaching your individual school to identify a champion who you can work with and help navigate the approval through the district. And I've seen it from the parents and families and students work as well when they have a need and really help champion and advocate for bringing services to school. But those individuals at the school level, such as the school nurse, are really an integral partner when you're looking at building partnerships. And it can go to the school principal, the counselor, the director of student health, and sometimes even a board member can really help you navigate back through the best way to work through what the process is and what's needed.
Yeah. And I'll add on to that, Paula. When we're talking about how schools and school-based health centers might operationalize vaccination sites going forward, school-based health centers already at a very large resource for vaccinations currently. They're already actively doing this as part of routine care in the school-based health center. Many school-based health centers participate in the federally funded Vaccine for Children program, or the VFC it's called, and they provide routine vaccinations to the pediatric population as part of their regular day-to-day care. So utilizing this already established in the school-based health center as a vaccine entry point can really maximize and that equitable and effectiveness needed to vaccinate children moving forward. And we've also seen in the schools a lot of mobile health clinics for schools for preventative and pediatric primary care. And the COVID-19 vaccination efforts would fall right into that same modality as well.
And Dr. McLaurin, how is this vaccine rollout, the one that we're preparing to do for 5 to 11-year-olds, how is that different from other ones?
Yeah, well, it is different. And again, that's something that we need to say right up front as a healthcare community, whether it's school-based or whether it's in a non-school-based health center, that it is new. And so people are concerned because it's new. And I think we just need to be honest and say, yep, it's new, but it's been tested in thousands and thousands of children before your child ever rolls up their sleeve. I think to your previous question, we really need to emphasize safety. Parents have a pretty good understanding of getting something like an MMR because they got one or they've had other children, that sort of thing. But this vaccine, they have no experience with. So we need to make sure that we're communicating about safety. And at the school-based health center, that even if it seems routine to the people who are providing it, that they communicate to the staff at the school and to the families what their policies and procedures are, that they do have equipment ready in case anybody has an allergic reaction, that they do have protocols in place if anybody needs help, and that they're communicating clearly with the families that the children go home to about what to do if there's any side effects, and that those children who might be in grade 3 are going home and their parent doesn't speak English and they have a Band-Aid on their leg, and this has happened to me as a pediatrician, where the parent will call and say, I don't know what it is, they got a shot and now they have a fever. And sometimes that happens despite our best intentions. So we have to make sure that we're communicating broadly, over communicate about what exactly is happening and who's there at the time and who do we call if there's a side effect, and how do we follow up? But I think good coordination between the school-based health centers and other providers of record facilitates that. A lot of times, children that go to a school-based health center also do go to another healthcare provider. And so making sure that we coordinate all that with each other is important.
Yeah, that's a really valid point, because often we're asked, does a school-based health center replace my pediatrician or primary care provider of record? Does it take place of a school nurse or school counselor? And the answer to that is absolutely not. It's when we coordinate care and do and work around the student for what's best is when we see the best results. And I echo the sentiment of that collaboration. And I think this is an opportunity as well when we are all looking at how to get vaccinations available through a trusted resource and how we work together to do that. Each of us have a different lens that has a relationship and where that is. I don't think there's a right or wrong as long as it's accessible and available whenever it is. Because when you look at school-based health centers, more than half of them are sponsored by community health centers and those 30 million Americans they serve. So that continuum of care, that's one of the things that I'm really in, that excites me. Whenever you're thinking of looking at the whole child and working together with their family unit, their primary care provider when one exists, and the services at the school for the whole.
And I think that builds trust too, is when families know we're not just interested in your child as an arm to put a vaccine in, but actually this is part of what we would be doing holistically for your child during the year in coordination with your community providers. And it reassures people that we're not just lining people up like a factory and giving them shots, but no, this is really part of a coordinated community-based care program.
Absolutely.
And just circling back to the parents' concerns with the COVID vaccine, I mean, one of the things we've heard is, first of all, there in some cases, the parent themselves are vaccinated. We've been hearing about that, but they're a little more hesitant to have their 5 to 11-year-old vaccinated. But the other consideration that we've heard in our work here at NAC is, why would a parent want a child immunized if the disease has presented so mild in young children? That has been some of the things we're hearing. Dr. McLaurin, and then Ms. Fields or Ms. Goddard, would you address that?
Sure. I'm happy to address that from a pediatrician's point of view. I've got asked that with other diseases like measles or chickenpox, particularly chickenpox. Sometimes people would say, well, I'd rather have them just get it and get it over with. And my response to that is, in every 1 to 2 classrooms of an elementary school, there is a child who's profoundly immunocompromised. They're either experiencing cancer or they have some other disease and their parent is vigilant about protecting them, and chickenpox can kill them if they get it. And for me, that was a reason for parents to think about getting that particular vaccine. COVID, it's very similar. Your child may actually do just fine. There isn't a guarantee, and we can't tell ahead of time which one won't unless we know that they're immunocompromised. But there's also the community, the person that they might meet in the grocery store, or other people at the school, or, you know, members of their family. So that's one reason. And the second is to look at relative risk related to long-term COVID, which we really don't know much about right now. And the numbers are actually surprising in what we're seeing and how many children have been affected both by the more dramatic multi-system inflammatory response, but also by some of the long-haul COVID. And that seems to happen not necessarily with profound disease, but with some of the more moderate disease. So it's a risk-benefit ratio, and the shot is very safe, and the risk of having a problem with the shot is very minimal. So in that sense, the protection, the value of protection is much higher than the value of risk.
I think, you know, because I hear this, I hear the same thing with families, with clients, that parents feel like COVID is less severe in that population. But really, we don't know, like, of the kids that are infected, we don't know what their, there's no way to tell in advance what their reaction is going to be. And the science still tells us, the data still tells us, there's 1.9 million 5 to 11 year olds that have been infected with COVID-19. There's been more than 8,300 COVID-19 hospitalizations in that 5 to 11 year age range. And like Dr. McLaren mentioned, the multi-system inflammatory system, or MISC, it's highest in that 5 to 11 category. So there's still that component of, like she was referring to, the risk and benefit. We don't know how your child's going to react if they do get COVID-19. And so we want to do everything we can to make sure they're protected.
And one child death is one too many. I've heard some people say, well, only X number died. And it's like, well, how many is it okay to die? I mean, none. And, you know, this is a pandemic. We're hoping that the more people who are immunized, the quicker it stops. So it also buys your child a lot of freedom, really. I mean, but it's a liberating vaccine.
We hear in this country how we have a crisis of unvaccinated children, not just for COVID, but for other childhood diseases that are preventable as well. How can the collaborations, the schools, the providers work together to solve this problem? And part of it is misinformation. Part of it is building trust. But the other part of it is access to care, right? I mean, is that something that you guys focus on in your work with the school-based alliance?
For sure. I'm going to jump in before you and just say I'm so grateful when they can give vaccinations in a safe, effective way at schools, because one of the reasons children aren't immunized on time a lot of times is because their parents are working and they can't get off. If they don't work, they don't get paid. A lot of day laborers. And so if they need to come at 10 a.m. to my health center to get their child a vaccine, that means they miss work. And it's expensive. And it also may include transportation difficulties. It may include all sorts of challenges that we're not aware of. So when it can happen safely and effectively in the school, it's really a boon.
It is. And that's the reality for so many students in America. And when healthcare can come to the schools, it does eliminate a lot of those barriers around access, parents missing work. And that's the beauty and the innovation of school-based healthcare and school-based health centers, providing that access right where they are. And especially whenever you're coordinating with the existing services, it can be a really safe, nurturing place to remove some of those barriers. And ultimately, the student comes out and wins in the end with their health and academic outcomes.
Yeah. And Paula, you and I have been in a lot of webinars and different communication mediums. And what you both just spoke to reminds me of how they're phrasing the no wrong door approach, that really we do want wherever the children and family can access care to get the COVID-19 vaccine, that we're all really playing together to try to break down those inequitable barriers to receiving the vaccine. And that I think an important point that I heard brought up earlier is that we're communicating with one another, that we reach out to their community pediatrician, make sure they know they receive the vaccine at the school, what it is, make sure that that documentation is being sent to their fax or to their EHR system, that it's being uploaded in the electronic data vaccine registry. Like, those are all just kind of components on how we can help one another so that we can best vaccinate this 5 to 11 cohort rollout.
And I don't know if it's happening, but I think it would be really amazing if it could be coordinated with, like, flu vaccine too. I don't know if that's part of what is going to happen in the schools, but as Amy was talking about, you know, children are behind on vaccinations now because of COVID. So they're behind on their preventive care. And again, taking time out from work twice for all of that is difficult. And so if it can happen, that would be wonderful.
You know, I spoke to a health center last week in the Bronx, and they mentioned in their pediatric population, which they're preparing to vaccinate, at least most of their pediatric population have lost a family member at home because the hospitals were so overwhelmed in the early stages of the pandemic that the family member, and they lived in congregate settings, most often died at home. And so what I thought when I heard this was we're looking at a crisis of you know, trauma among pediatrics, kids who have been isolated, and need probably mental health services and support, and who've experienced a tragedy at home. And I guess I raise this because this is another value of a school-based health centers and the alliances, that you're not just talking about shots in the arms, as you said, you're talking about providing other whole health support services. Am I correct?
Indeed. I often will start with the student at the center and say, can you imagine going to school sick if you're depressed or a toothache? And can you thrive? Can you really sit and learn when you have some type of physical or behavioral health issue that's really bothering you? Can you get through the day? And the answer to that as an adult is I couldn't. For the students, they experience the same. And that's, I think, where the beauty of school-based health care comes in. And whenever you look at that, yes, students can get access if they need that physical to detect, you know, is there a hearing problem or a vision problem? And that's something they haven't had checked in the last year. If they need their teeth checked or to speak to a mental health counselor in that safe environment without the barriers that they and their families often face, that's what's in it for the student and the win for the student and the family. And that's where we would like to be. And although there's over 2,500 school-based health centers, and like I said before, over half of those are sponsored by community health centers, there's a lot of room for growth. Because I think we see inequities every day in your community and in those that you work to serve, and probably even worse than what we see. Others experience that we don't always have an idea because we don't experience it firsthand.
There is so much grief right now, and the American Academy of Pediatrics declared a mental health emergency in children. And I don't know if they've ever done that before. It's the first time in my 35 years of being a pediatrician that I've heard of it. But it's not just a twindemic. There's so many now, a quadruple demic, because we have the mental health. We've also had a huge rise in obesity in children in the last 2 years. And that's been measured, that the pandemic has brought about a huge rise in obesity. That's related to schools and food security and virtual learning and just parental stress and parental loss. So it's been a rather chaotic time for our children. And I think, you know, using this momentum with the 5 to 11-year-olds, even to sort of recenter everybody, it's an opportunity to say, you know, we're going to wrap our arms around you, and now you're the most important one in the room. That alone has value.
As we talk about just the whole healthcare needs of children in this pandemic, I think that's really important. And hopefully the vaccinations of the 5 to 11-year-olds will allow us to return to some kind of new normal. But even after this pandemic is over, there are other health considerations for kids. And because I know we mentioned them earlier, I was wondering if we could go over those again, because I think it would be important to highlight the role of school-based health centers in beyond the pandemic and addressing these whole health needs. And I'll let anybody answer that. This is your opportunity to talk about the value of access to care at any age, really.
Sure. Well, of the 2,700 plus school-based health centers that we currently know that exist across the U.S., almost all provide primary care or primary preventative care. And many also offer behavioral health. And like Dr. McLaurin had touched on earlier, the behavioral health needs currently are a huge concern. A lot of scholars are calling the mental health needs the second pandemic, right? In our kids, because of the trauma that everyone's endured. And I say trauma very, very broadly, not just medical trauma, but everything that they've endured through this pandemic. And then a lot of school-based health centers also provide dental services. And so you really can, at your school-based health center, receive all of those different components of health right in your child's environment.
Having services on site through a school-based health center or the community health center, bringing services to the school if you don't have a bricks and mortar site for the primary preventative care, but also for those services that aren't every day, such as the vision and the dental through different modalities, really breaks through the access mm-hmm. to barrier and works to eliminate the barriers to educational aspirations and goals that we hope each and every child succeeds and exceeds.
Just remember that every touch matters, including the ones where the family says, no, I don't want that for my child. It gives you an opportunity to find out more about why and what they need and to address their concerns, which are important concerns. And I think we need to not be so laser focused on we're going to get a vaccine in every child that we miss the opportunity to address the real health concerns that families have for their children and to work with them with a long view towards improving
health. I remember as a parent 20 years ago, a school health center been in my child's school in rural West Virginia. And I thought, oh, we don't need that. He has a pediatrician. And one day I was working in another state and his father was 10 miles underground somewhere. And he calls and is like, Mom, I need help. I have pink eye. And I said, okay, Cody, what do you want me to do? Kind of thing. And I laughed and he said, you know, there's a clinic in the school here. And I was like, oh, I can't come and get you. His pediatrician was in our way. And I never thought of having a barrier to care. You know, both parents working, didn't think a thing of it. And we figured it out and got the consent done. And he went down and his school-based health center was able to talk to his pediatrician. And the thing is, he had an avulsion and only has one eye. So it becomes a really big deal whenever something happens to his vision. And they were able to get the medication called in after talking to the ophthalmologist and were able to even coordinate in getting that medicine home. And before I was able to get there, his father was able to get there. He had received care, had received treatment, and was on his way to recovery. So even when we think, oh, that may not be a need, there are barriers that exist regardless of where you are, and figuring out the innovations on how to make access to care easier and to reduce those barriers, but also to teach the next generation how to access healthcare and advocate on their own behalf. Is what I come away from that as really being the aha for me. And since then, I say I've been bitten by the bug, and I am a huge advocate for school-based health care. And I hope that all children are have equitable access to school-based health care in the near future. That's my lofty big goal.